Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, as we continue on the subject of recovery, let's talk about tactics to recover, in fact, strengthen your marriage following an unfortunate setback. As our current guests advise in a recent blog, nobody ever promised that your marriage would be fair, just, and beautiful all the time. All marriages, including those that last, go through trauma and uncertainty, and the secret to a strong marriage is how well you two react and pull together in tough and uncertain times. And regular listeners to our program will remember our next guests, Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz. They were guests on our May 6th program and gave an outstanding interview on the subject, Building a Love That Lasts. And I remind you, you can listen to the May 6th interview or any of our past interviews because all of our programs are archived on this site. So if you haven't caught their interview before, now might be a good time to do that. To refresh your memory, Dr. Charles and Elizabeth Schmitz are considered America's number one love and marriage experts. They're best-selling and multiple award-winning authors, and their latest book, Building a Love That Lasts, The 7 Surprising Secrets of Successful Marriages, and they've researched marriages over the past 30 years and have interviewed happily married couples on all 7 continents. Hello, doctors, and welcome back to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Glad to be here, Roy.
Good to be here, Roy.
Well, on your last visit, you revealed the 7 secrets to a great marriage. And today I'd like to concentrate on recovery from some life-altering challenges that are common to middle age. Why do some marriages survive and actually strengthen following a loss or trauma, while others crumble? And let's jump right into it. And here's a problem very common in the difficult economy today, both in the USA and Europe, and that's extended unemployment of either a husband or a wife. Let's say that one spouse has lost their job and can't find work, but the other remains employed, and the husband or wife has been off for some time and is beginning to lose self-confidence, and you as a couple and a family have had to cut back some expenditures, but you're coping. But how can the employed husband or wife inspire his or her spouse to keep trying and not to give up?
Well, the first rule, Roy, and you know this well, is the world has difficulty dealing with whiners. In other words, if you just sit around and complain about your situation and go down the negative path, the negative road, then nothing's going to get solved. And we think what we've discovered in our many interviews is that when people sort of suck it up and say, look, we've got to address this head on. We've got to do positive things, take positive actions, you know, redo the resume, start calling upon old friends to help out, keep your confidence about you, keep your wits about you, that goes a long way towards, transitioning you to the positive level. But people that sit around and whine and feel sorry for themselves, it just doesn't work. It doesn't pay off in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, is it true that it's a greater problem maybe when the man's off work rather than, well, I don't know, but there's such an ego thing. So many of us men define ourselves so much by what our profession is or how much money we earn, and I could think that would be a real problem. And, of course, the other thing a lot of males really fear, which is silly, is a role reversal. They don't want to be considered Mr. Mom, and yet that might be the ideal situation, at least in the short term, if they can't find a job, that they assume primary caregiving facility or for the children and that kind of thing.
Well, I think you're right on, and but you know the thing about it is that it is evolving and changing, with more and more women in the workforce, more and more women who are the primary breadwinners or at least a co-equal breadwinner. So probably over time that has seen some changes. But clearly men have traditionally been the hunters and the gatherers, if
yeah.
you will. And men more than women, according to the research. Identify who they are with the work that they do. Their
yeah.
job becomes a sense of who they are, their self-importance, their self-worth, that kind of thing. So that's very clear that in the case of men, we really sort of are what we do. We define ourselves by our work. And if we don't have work, it probably is much more devastating to men than it would be to women, although we would say that's probably evolving and changing over time.
Yeah, I would hope so, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. But
right.
I know it would be tough for me, though, if I I don't know, in one way, of course, you could look at it the other way. If you have a positive outlook on life, it's an ideal time for the unemployed spouse to take a mental vacation and decide what they really want to do with the rest of their lives. I mean, they have the ideal situation if they have a spouse who continues to earn enough that they can live on.
It's absolutely true, and the key to all of it we found with these terrific couples that we've interviewed all over the world, when they've had these kind of real stresses and challenges in their life, is they communicate openly. They communicate about every aspect of it. Basically, they talk, and they work through things so that as the person that's having difficulty or not having the job goes through that ordeal and that emotion, there's that relationship cheerleader in the other spouse that helps them get through it, and they share the burdens together because
yes,
of it.
And it's so important that the other spouse convince the person out of work that he or she is no less important or no less loved or no less a person just because they're temporarily out of work.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and that's probably the most important factor, because that person that's out of work, if they lost their job, is trying to figure out what's wrong with them, are they okay, what did
yeah.
they do wrong, and it may be totally a financial situation with the company or institution they were with.
Yeah.
But they take it on as a personal affront, and they have a lot of trouble with self-confidence. And the spouse that is working or the spouse that's at home, they are key to how that person recovers.
And Roy, there's one related thing that I just wanted to mention that's been sort of a, I don't know if it's a new discovery with us, but we're hearing it more.
Yeah.
When people lose their job, you know, they have friends and associates at work.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they have to overcome is that those people don't have much contact with them anymore.
Yeah.
And some of them go out there without the job now, and they feel abandoned by their friends and this and that. But what we've discovered, if you drill down in that a little bit, their friends at work, their old friends, haven't forgotten about them. But they have a life to live. Their life goes on.
Yeah.
You know, they have to deal with their associates, they have to deal with the boss, they have to deal with the work that they're doing. And it's and oftentimes the guy or gal out of work sort of takes it personal. People have
yeah.
left me, they've abandoned me.
Yeah, I would think also that in some cases the person out of work may be uncomfortable and want to avoid those people simply because they're ashamed or somehow blame themselves or figure they're not as important now that they don't have that corner office anymore or they don't have that job that they had before.
Well, that's absolutely true, and they also don't know how to start up conversations and how to relate to those people, because they sure don't want to talk about work, because
no.
that's what that was their conversation, and their
yeah.
conversation now is extremely limited, and the people at work are real sheepish and don't really want to make that contact with them. And so you have on both sides a real hard situation with how do I relate.
And sadly, those could be the ideal people to network with, because they might know of other situations or other positions somewhere else that they could connect you with. But
absolutely. No question about that.
Well, let's say there's even a worse situation. What about couples and families that face real financial crises? Maybe they're both off work, or maybe the spouse didn't work before, and they're facing maybe a foreclosure, unpaid taxes, massive debt load, even personal bankruptcy. How can couples work together to solve those financial crises before stress, bickering, and the blame game tears the whole marriage apart. I think that's one of the big challenges in today's society.
Most important point you hit on, Roy, right off the bat, was they have to do this together.
Yeah.
It's not a me or you. It's not a either or. It's, you know, it's not you and me. It's us.
Yeah, it's got to be a shared sacrifice, too. One spouse can't give up everything while the other keeps doing, you know, playing golf and doing whatever they want.
Absolutely.
And communicating, they've got to sit down, they have to make a plan, they have to talk about it. And if they're in such bad financial situation that they're facing foreclosure, yeah, bankruptcy, the whole thing, they have got to seek good financial help from somebody on the outside.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people out there right now ready to help.
It's so important that they look at the light at the end of the tunnel, that they have some kind of a plan for recovery and maybe you know, some rewards they plan to reward themselves with once they're out of the jam, so that it's not all negative. It's they're pulling together for something better than what they have now.
Some people are afraid to contact the bank or the creditor or
yeah,
or whatever. But the truth is, you know, our economy has not been in the most stellar place in the past 6-7 years. And so more and more banks and financial institutions and credit card companies and the like, they understand this. They've dealt with more and more people like this. And what we have found in our interviews is that people, these institutions are much more willing to work with you.
Yeah, they don't want to foreclose on your home. They don't want to be stuck with trying to sell
it. They don't want a whole a city block full of empty homes.
No.
They know that homes are much better if people are living in them. You know, even the home survives better when people live in it.
You know, this is a good question. If you have children, my opinion is that you should get them involved rather than try to hide that mommy and daddy have a serious financial problem. I mean, anyone older than a toddler, I think that, you know, you should probably ask your children to sacrifice and pull together in a financial emergency as well.
You are 100% correct, and it's absolutely critical for their learning and their upbringing to understand that when financial things hit, you sit down, you work it out together, the whole family.
Yeah, we are a family and we work it out together. That's
absolutely.
And I know in a prior the prior interview when you were here, you said people should definitely have a joint bank account and do things, plan things together and no surprise expenditures.
Absolutely. Roy, and you've heard this out there, and you probably have some associates that pass out this sort of garbage advice. They'll say, well, you should have separate checking accounts, or you should keep your money separately. Or you know, and then you think to yourself, or you say to them, well, what about marriage? What does marriage mean? Go your individual ways? Of course not. It means that joint responsibility, joint love, joint children, joint everything. And
yeah,
that's the way it should be. That's the way it's been, you know, for 3,000 plus years. And so people have got to understand that when you take joint responsibility for these things, for finances, for your home, for the maintenance of your car, for paying the bills, whatever the case may be, raising the children, this defines a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, this defines a marriage, and when we do things that are contrary to that, turning two into one, this we and us versus you and I and the like, that's the key. That's what people need to understand.
Yeah.
And once they make that commitment, they find that sharing the burdens of life on two shoulders is four shoulders, I should say, is a lot better place to be than trying to carry all the burden yourself.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, you said the last time you were here, you said probably the most essential ingredient in any marriage is complete trust in each other and openness. But the sad truth is, in many established marriages, there have been or are extramarital affairs. And let's say, though, that you as an offending partner have ended your affair, you're truly sorry, and you desperately want to gain forgiveness and win back your spouse's full confidence. I know it's probably difficult, but is full restoration possible? Is it possible to regain trust when you've been straying like that, or is that pretty much a lost cause?
You know, I would love to tell you, Roy, that it's possible, and we've seen great marriages that have worked through these things, but the truth of the matter is we haven't. We've seen marriages that have learned to accommodate and work a different relationship. But once that trust level has been broken, rebuilding the trust. It's not rebuilding back to the same level. It's putting together and reconstructing a relationship in a different manner, because the ultimate betrayal is infidelity.
Oh, I agree. What do you mean by accommodation exactly? I don't know. What's the best you can hope for, let's say, in restoring that?
That means that if that person is 1 minute late, they said they'd be home at 10 o'clock, you can't expect to come in the door and not have the spouse who was cheated upon wondering where the hell they were.
Yeah.
You can keep doing it. You can keep saying it, but it's just that level of complete trust. And let me tell you why. Because to do the betrayal in the first place took lying and cheating.
Yeah.
It didn't just happen as, openly, and I had this affair, and I'm having this affair, and all these things are going on. It took lying and cheating, and the spouse that was lied and cheated to wakes up and finds out they were lied and cheated to.
Yeah, that old line, I never intended to cheat on you. It's something that just happened.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing, I wonder, and this is the thing, we've written about it, and it gets, and some of the actions of these folks get a little irritating to us, to say the least. But, you know, when you think about Schwarzenegger, or you think about Anthony Weiner, or the former governor of South Carolina, or the former governor
Sanford.
Of New York, you know, and on and on and on, and boy, there they are standing by their men. Well, you know, the truth is, That has to be done principally for political reasons or a lot of pressure. You know, behind the scenes, I'll guarantee you there's a lot of yelling and screaming and the trust has just been dissolved. And just imagine these four or five cases, these poor humiliated women who now have to somehow say, oh, it's okay, we'll all recover. Well, the truth of the matter is, and the advice that we give to people all the time, can some of those marriages be saved? Sure. They can. Yeah. There's always hope, I guess. But the truth of the matter is, most of them can't be.
Yeah.
Most of the trust will never be recovered. The best advice, don't engage in infidelity.
No, that's for sure. Here's something I'd be willing to bet. In your interviews with all the great marriages around the world, I bet you didn't find many examples of really great marriages that were open marriages.
Roy, I can tell you we didn't find any. Because these great marriages, their number one asset, their number one strength, and the number one thing they talk about is their unconditional trust. They trust each other with their life, their liberty, their money, their well-being. Charlie, the other day, it was the funniest thing. We were driving, and he couldn't reach the Excedrin, and he said, you know, would you get me a couple of Excedrin? So I gave him the water, he put it in, I popped the Excedrin in, and he just laughed, and he said, you know, that's unbelievable trust. You could have put anything in my mouth, but I know you put Excedrin in my mouth.
When I was a little kid, I used to play with my mother, open your mouth and close your eyes, and I'll give you a big surprise, when she wanted me to take medicine or something. And one time I was only maybe five or so, and I thought it'd be cute to put some ant poison in her mouth. But she didn't find that to be very funny.
My mama would have probably taken a little blister to my backside if I would have done that.
Well, it was just a game after all, and I didn't really understand what I was doing.
Well, you know, Roy, that open marriage thing, I just want to comment on that for a second. We penned an article recently about the normal curve.
Yeah.
And you remember that from your graduate classes and so
forth. Oh, yeah.
But the notion is people take a behavior that is outside of normal, and they try to convince you that it's normal.
Yeah.
And then they turn, and so many of these folks turn it into a PC sort of thing, a political correctness thing, where they have the audacity to criticize marriage between a man and a woman that's existed for 3,000 to 5,000 years or perhaps more, and act like that's abnormal. But open marriage is normal, or, you know, marriage between two people of the same sex. And we don't condemn these people. We say, you know, what you do in the privacy of your bedroom and your life is entirely up to you. But don't go out and preach to the rest of us that there's something wrong with what we do when we are normal. And that's the key. The PC stuff gets in the way of marriage and traditional marriage. You know, a recent court case ruled that that basically said that marriage is a privilege, that marriage is an indication of a successful life, successful marriage. You know, and that's just the way it is. And so no wonder so many different folks aspire to marriage in one variation or one form or another, because it is a sign not only of success, but it also says that, that somebody loves me, somebody shares my burden, somebody is my confidant, somebody can stick Excedrin in my mouth, and I don't question that that's what they put in my mouth.
Isn't it ridiculous that somebody would say that it's not politically correct to not cheat on your spouse?
That's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. We penned an article one time about related to that, and we got blasted by several folks who said that that's really okay. Infidelity, open marriage, all that is okay. That it doesn't have any effect, blah, 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 and so forth and so forth. And so you sit there reading this stuff, and you wonder what planet they live on.
Yeah.
You know, human relationships just aren't defined. They don't work that way. And people can sit around and call something green all day long, and if it's blue, it's still going to be blue, you know?
Well, let's talk about one final type situation. What if your spouse has begun to experience health problems, or you're concerned that he or she will experience health problems because they're having trouble either bad habits or controlling their own health? Let's say they've gained a lot of weight and from overeating or lack of exercise, of course, smoking, or say they have a drinking problem. How can you inspire your spouse to change habits before too late without nagging and turning him or her off? I know that's a difficult challenge for a lot of married people who really love their spouse but are concerned because of their health.
Roy, that is the toughest question that you could ask, because there is such a fine balance between nagging, harassment, and encouragement. And it's a way of encouraging and setting the stage and setting the tone.
Yeah.
It's a way of saying, let's go for a walk, and having a place to go and a place to be that is enjoyable. You can't say, let's go for a walk, and it's 100 degrees outside, and the person isn't fit to walk in 50 degrees.
Yeah.
You have to set the conditions, and you have to help. It's just like taking the medicine, and I hate to be sexist, but with men going to the doctor for an annual physical.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. My wife always wants me to go to the doctor more than I want to go to the doctor. But
would you believe the way I got around that is we make the appointment the same day, so we both have to go, so he'll go.
And we have the same doctor that gives us the annual physical, so that's the way we solve that problem.
Yeah, actually, my wife and I sort of solved that because we were going to go for these tests that they come around and give every so often. And I finally agreed to go, and she agreed to go at the same time.
There you go.
It's a hard thing. There are many ways of encouraging and setting the stage and being positive without nagging.
Yeah.
But it depends on the individual couple and how far you can push them. But there's such a thing as you want them around when they're old, and you want them to get old. And the only way they're going to get old is if they stay healthy. And
you've got to handle it just right when you say, I'm only saying this because I love you so much, because it's so close to nagging when you say that. And the other spouse wonders whether that's really the case or whether it's selfish. I want you around for my sake, not for your own sake.
That's right. And I have a great personal example of that, Roy. It happened a couple years ago. When I went for my annual physical, and it shows you how important these things are, there was a funny spike or two in my EKG.
Yeah.
First time it ever showed up and the like. So we went to Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. And we had a wonderful young heart surgeon by the name of Dr. Chen. And she did some tests, and she came into the room a little bit later, and she sat down at the table, and she flipped something that looked like a quarter or something. She flipped it across the table at me, and it kind of bumba 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 bounced over to me. And she looked me in the eye, and she says, Charlie, a good heart is a terrible thing to waste. And I looked at her kind of startled by that, and she said, I said, what is this? She said, that's a pacemaker.
Oh.
You have a perfectly good heart, but you have an electrical problem. And if you don't take care of it, someday it's going to kill you. And I thought, whoa. How about that?
I discovered that in an annual physical.
What a
wonderful thing that physician did. That's such a great way to put it and to get your attention.
Roy, it's something that I encouraged, forced, nagged, whatever you want to call it, till he went in for it. And that's why I was so careful with the answer, because when you love them that much, you have to force the issue to get the treatment they need if you know they need it.
That's an excellent way to put it. But if you love them that much, you're going to really force them to do what they need to do.
I said out loud, Roy, no, I don't need to do this. And then I looked over at my wife, Liz, and her eyes were all welted up with tears. I thought, maybe I ought to reconsider that decision. You know, here's somebody that cares more about me than I care about myself.
Yeah, that's an excellent example.
So my life has been so completely different since I had that pacemaker installed. And it's a very non-invasive procedure. They just put a little hole in your chest and stick a couple wires through a artery top and the bottom of the heart and give you a battery and away you go. You know,
it's
completely non-invasive.
It's not something that just is done to the very old. You know, you always think of about 85-year-old guys with a pacemaker.
I was shocked at my age that I would need to do that, but then I recall that my dad had one put in when he was in his late 70s.
That's great to hear that you're doing well now. But remind our audience how you contain your latest book, Building a Love That Lasts, The 7 Surprising Secrets to a Successful Marriage.
Amazon.com or anywhere books are sold.
That sounds good.
And you can go to our website, Roy. It's simplethingsmatter.com, and then it gives the reader a whole array of book companies that they can order from.
Oh, that sounds great. And there's also some very helpful blogs on that website. And I know we recommended it before when you were here, and I would definitely recommend it again. And we want to thank you so much, doctors, for joining us today, and trust that people will take those steps to really demonstrate that they really want their marriages to last and strengthen them. And beyond all else, what is one piece of advice that you would give a couple to sustain and strengthen their marriage going forward?
Hug each other every day, all the time, as often as you can. Touch, hug, and be supportive.
Make that that very personal connection. And my piece of advice is always the same. Communicate, communicate, communicate.
Yeah.
You can't solve problems if you don't talk to each other, if you don't deal with the issue out loud.
You can't just
go off into separate rooms and think it's going to solve it.
No, things never work out that way by separating yourselves. Go out for a walk and stomp around for a while and expect things to get better.
Go ahead and get mad. It's okay. People get angry. People in successful relationships argue. There's nothing wrong with arguing. It's about how you do it. You know, you can argue effectively, or you can rant and rave and kick the dog and become abusive, and that's the way some people react to that. But you don't have to do it that way, and it's okay to argue. It's okay to disagree. Learn how to work it out, and the only way you work it out is when you communicate, communicate, communicate.
Yeah, and we certainly agree with that, and thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great day.
Thanks, Roy.
Bye-bye.
Well, I trust you were inspired by the Smiths' interview. You know, this is the second time I've had them on the program, and each time I've marveled at how well they interact as a couple. They are not at all what you would expect out of a couple of PhDs, are they? I know they've done the research and they've interviewed couples all around the world, but their advice is so practical and down-to-earth, and not at all like academic-oriented study and research. But it's easy to see why they have been happily married for 47 years, and they are an inspiration, we thank, for having them. You know, it's a real contrast with the comments you often hear like this. I bet You probably heard this when you were, if you're a guy, when you were out with the other guys at the golf course or whatever, or if you're a woman dealing with other women and no men around, you like to, you probably heard comments like this. You know, when we were married for 32 years to the same person, it's awfully tough to feel romantic. Or you may have heard this kind of a comment. Years ago, my spouse used to make my heart beat faster, but with the kids and all, now we're basically just the best of friends. Well, at least in that case, that's better than enemies living in the same household. You know, the good doctors Schmitz are a tough act to follow, but from my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, here are a few suggestions that I've made for restoring romance and a full loving partnership in your marriage. Here's one. How about pretending tomorrow is Valentine's Day? You know, Valentine's Day doesn't have to be in the cold of February. It can be any time. At least for today, make the spouse the sole center of your attention. Absolutely no agenda on your own, but your only agenda today is to or let's make it tomorrow, is to satisfy your spouse's needs. Now, if you're a man, you probably don't want to do this on a fall weekend when you might miss the NFL games, but any other day of the week, you know, just get up and say, well, honey, do you want to go to the craft fair, work around the house? How about a day at the beach? Whatever you like. And if you're a woman, you know, you might want to go to a football game with your man if that's what he really wants to do. But spend that one day when you really put your own desires and agenda aside and give yourself fully, at least for the day, to your spouse and see how well that works. Here's another idea that I often try, and that's imagine the ideal romantic life partner for your spouse. And then you know, think about it. If you had not been around when your spouse was looking to get married or looking for a romance, what would that ideal person be like? And how closely do you fit the ideal? And you know, if you're far from the ideal, how much are you willing to change? Can you satisfy your spouse's desires and ideals without compromising your own life objectives, which, of course, nobody wants to become the next Edith Bunker or Casper Milquetoast. So it's a sharing type thing. And the question is, can the two of you meet in the middle and both find joy and satisfaction? A third idea, if you have kids, set aside at least one night a week and one weekend a month for just you two. When no one tells you and your spouse what to do, what do you as a couple enjoy the most? Do that during the next week. If you have children, arrange a sitter. Okay, you may not be able to get away one weekend every month, but that weekly date night is a must. And you don't always have to go out and spend a lot of money, but get away from the kids, because that's so important that the two of you just sit down and you may want to dine in a romantic restaurant. Maybe you're just sit in the bedroom, sit next to each other in bed and look each other in the eye and discuss, cuddle up by the fire. But you need that time away from the children, a time for just the two of you to renew those precious vows that you made years ago. Don't hesitate to demonstrate romantic affection in front of the children. Show them clearly that you're not just mom and dad. You know, I love my parents very much, and they were married for about 62 years before my father passed away. But in all those years, I never saw them hug and kiss. In fact, I thought my parents only had sex to make babies. And since I only had one sister, I guess that would mean they only had sex twice in their entire adult lives. No, I don't suggest you invite the kids into the bedroom, but you certainly can demonstrate clearly how much you love each other, and that includes physical hugs and other signs of romance in front of the children, because they're going to grow up and they might as well see what it's like or what it can be like for a truly good marriage. And why not be a demonstration of that in front of your children? If one or both of you are not fully satisfied with your own appearance or your spouse's energy, fitness, or appearance, why not launch a diet and exercise regimen together? And I'm not saying that you should insult your spouse or anything like that, but make it a contest. Promise each other rewards for milestones reached. and say that I need to lose 30 pounds and my wife only needs to lose 10, and so the contest might not be totally fair, but set fair milestones so that, and then be sure to come up with some rewards. If a wife is willing to lose a bunch of weight and get in shape, why not a trip to the mall for a whole new wardrobe? Or maybe both of you hit a new weight target. How about at least a week, maybe 2 weeks in Hawaii as a reward for losing weight and getting in shape? And a contest often works well if both husband and wife are committed to getting in shape and losing that excess weight. Ask yourself, why am I in this marriage? What attracted me to my spouse years ago? And if your relationship once produced joy, adventure, and mutual admiration, why doesn't it still produce those elements today? Who has changed and why? Is it you that's changed more, or is it your spouse? What do you expect from your relationship going forward, and what does your spouse expect out of you? Now, please set aside any guilt feelings and don't blame it on your spouse or on yourself. Do you still crave romance, surprise, and a spirit of adventure in your relationship, or are you really at this point in life just looking for comfort and ease? Does your spouse... And what are your desires and expectations for the future? And what are your spouse's desires and expectations? And the crucial $64,000 question, are the two of you in sync? To conclude our brief discussion here today, some time ago, perhaps many years, you staked your future happiness upon the same life partner that you remain with today, and you also pledged to that person that his or her happiness and well-being meant everything to you. Back then, you cherished every minute the two of you spent together. Why not now? There is no law that says you are compelled to stay together for the rest of your life, and don't feel guilt should the two of you decide not to, but isn't this the person you committed your life to, and isn't it worth the effort to keep that relationship going? You know, I have a whole chapter on marriage and family relationships in my first book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. And relationships certainly are a key part of middle age renewal, because no one can really find joy and renew their lives and find lasting joy and satisfaction all alone. Certainly not if you're in a marriage or in a family situation where everyone else is down in the dumps and negative all the time. It's pretty tough to stay positive, as I'm sure you can figure out why. Please go to our website and preview my book today. Our website is www.middleagerenewal.com. You also can get the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. That's A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. Preview it today. And also, if you go to our website, middleagerenewal.com, you can obtain my free mini course as a gift. So join today in our growing congregation of renewed midlife winners. And tune in next week to our program, Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, when we talk about a health risk equivalent to smoking a pack of cigarettes a day and how you can overcome it. And thank you so much for tuning in to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.